It's here and now. And is it Friday already? Gee, it seems like a long week, especially if you're Jeb Bush. Let's take a look at our race for 2016.
Here and now.
2016.
All right, then. Joining us this week, Margaret Talov of Bloomberg News. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. How are you, Robin?
I'm good. NPR's Tamara Keith is here as well. Hi, Tamara.
Hello.
And I want you to start. We're going to recap Jeb Bush's week, which I'm sure thrills him endlessly. But how would you characterize this week with his comments on the Iraq war?
Well, I would say that it's probably the one question he has to answer correctly. It is the one question where 5 years ago, before he even thought about running for president, well, he was probably already thinking about it, he should have been working on the answer to the question, and he just didn't nail it. In fact, he answered at least three or four different ways. The question being, if you had 20/20 hindsight, would you have gone forward with the Iraq War as your brother did? And he ultimately said no, but it took all week.
Well, let's listen back, shall we? This started on Monday, where Megyn Kelly of Fox News asked him, as you said, whether knowing what everyone knows now, presumably that there were no weapons of mass destruction, as was claimed in 2003, would he have authorized the invasion of Iraq? I want people to listen to what he said, but also listen, you know, he might have misheard and been ready to answer another question, which was, in 2003, would you have done this? But let's hear what he said.
I would have, and so would have Hillary Clinton, just to remind everybody, and so would have almost everybody that was confronted with the intelligence they got.
You don't think it was a mistake?
In retrospect, the intelligence that everybody saw, that the world saw, not just the United States, was faulty.
See, that's the whole answer, you guys. But what we're hearing is the clip where he says, I would have with hindsight. But I'm wondering, Margaret, just weigh in there. We'll get to the rest of the week. But he may have been prepared for the question, would you have gone in 2003?
But he kind of should have been prepared for all of the questions.
Yes.
I mean, this is the real challenge for Jeb Bush, is that he wants to protect his brother's legacy, his father's legacy, the Bush family legacy, which is under assault right now from all the other Republicans who don't want him to be the nominee because they want to be the nominee. But at the same time, he needs to distinguish himself from his brother. And also at the same time, many of his foreign policy advisors were also people who were advising his brother and who supported the war in Iraq. So it's been a very difficult balancing act and a needle to thread. And I think sort of regardless of how smoothly he handled this, although it probably would have been better for him to handle it better.
Yeah.
He would still be stuck with the same kind of seesaw of, are you going to renounce the war? Or are you going to support the war? Or are you going to try to split the difference? Maybe the good thing for this, for Jeb Bush, is that it's still relatively early. And the nice thing about having a really bad week is that then you've had it. But he's created a couple of openings now for competitors, whether it's Marco Rubio, maybe even Chris Christie, he's hoping, in New Hampshire next week, that are a problem when he's been so aggressive with the fundraising.
Well, this was just Monday, and everybody immediately jumped in. But let's move on to Tuesday, shall we? When Jeb Bush called in to Sean Hannity's radio show and tried to backtrack from this perception that, well, it wasn't just perception, from saying to Megyn Kelly the day before, yes, he would have gone in and invaded Iraq in 2003, even if he knew what he knew now. That's the question she asked. So here's what he said on Tuesday.
I interpreted the question wrong, I guess. I was talking about, given what people knew then, would you have done it, rather than knowing what we know now. And knowing what we know now, you know, clearly there were mistakes.
It said there were mistakes, but he still didn't say, no, I would not do this. That took, till yesterday, when he said it's something in Arizona, clarifying, saying, knowing what we know now, I would not have engaged. I would not have gone into Iraq. But before that, and let's get ready this next clip, you know, he's confronted by a college student at a Reno town hall meeting. This is 19-year-old Ivy Zedrick, a University of Nevada, Reno student, who, you know, is accusing Jeb Bush's brother, George W. Let's listen.
Your brother created ISIS. Your
brother created ISIS. Tamara, just, you know, what are consultants saying to each other as this week is progressing?
Well, I would say first we need to note that the student is a young Democrat. She's not just some random kid off the street. She was there to confront Jeb Bush, and she did quite successfully, it seems. So this is the thing that is hanging around him. This is the thing that he has to deal with as a candidate. His last name is Bush, and that's what hangs over him. And as he was launching his listening tour, I don't know, it's not a campaign yet, but as he was getting started going out to do these events, he said, "I am going to be my own man. I am my own man, but I also love my brother and my father." And that is, as Margaret said, that's the balance he's working on.
Well, that we want, you know, we obviously that's something we're going to be talking about for months to come. But you just mentioned, what is he on, this tour that he's on, because he hasn't declared, or maybe he has. Let's listen to a slip of the tongue in Reno.
I'm running for president in 2016, and the focus is going to be about how we, if I run, how do you create high
sustainability? A lot was made of that, Margaret. It's slip of the tongue. Is that important?
I mean, not really. Look, this race has begun. Everybody is in the race, even if they're not in the race yet. They just have it's more about considerations, whether it's to do with their PAC or their fundraising or what they're legally allowed to do. But look, this thing is underway now. It's off to the races for everybody. And we're expecting another flood of formal announcements in the next couple of weeks.
But so. I'm wondering, though, if, you know, a slip of the tongue. And everybody knows people campaign without running so that they can avoid the campaign financing restrictions that happen when you formally announce. I mean, sorry to put it so bluntly. But does it go to what some people are saying, is that Jeb Bush, people assume he comes from this dynasty of politicians. He has been a very successful politician, but maybe he's a little rusty.
Well, to be fair, there's another person from a dynasty of politicians in the race going by the name of Hillary Clinton, who has not exactly put herself out there either. And what you see with both Jeb and Hillary Clinton is these two sort of giants of their parties, although she comes out of the gate as a fundraiser, front runner on the Democrat side, and Jeb's having, it's not as clear, but from a money perspective and a name perspective, clearly it's him. But both of them are dealing with these sort of questions about whether they're as quick of pivots and as ready to deal with the general public, whether it's a college student or a room full of people or a room full of press, you know, who actually want to cover them, as they should be at this stage in their careers. I think it's not just a Jeb Bush issue.
Well, Tamara, actually, you wrote a blog post on the 13 questions that Hillary Clinton has answered. Take this up, though. 13 questions. She just has not been talking.
Well, I mean, she has been talking to people who happen to not be reporters. She's done a bunch of these events where she has sort of listening sessions, roundtable discussions with real people who are hand-selected, some by the campaign, some not by the campaign. And she's taken a lot of questions from them, so it creates the appearance, the veneer of availability. But in terms of actually talking to the press, taking maybe hostile questions, there hasn't been much of that. And many of the questions that she has answered, many of those 13, were things like, "How are you liking Iowa, Hillary Clinton?" And that's not to say that we all in the press corps ask terrible questions. It's that when you're shouting at a moving target, sometimes you don't ask the best questions.
Like, hey, what about a question on TPP, right? Where does Hillary Clinton stand on this pivotal trade issue that has divided Obama and so much of his party and is a hot button issue for her? Why not talk about that?
She hasn't taken questions in 3 weeks. So, trade was a big issue, but it wasn't nearly as big an issue as it is now the last time she actually answered a question.
Well, we want to talk about one particular question that was delivered by from Katie Couric to Carly Fiorina, of course, a declared Republican candidate. And it's had a little bit of a response. This is on Yahoo News, where Katie Couric now is. And, you know, the Republican field is so crowded. Margaret, you've been writing about how nobody's really jumping out from this crowded field. But Katie asked Carly Fiorina whether she thinks she has a chance, given her lack of experience and low poll numbers, polling at about 1%, and then asked, isn't she hoping she'll be tapped for a vice president seat? Let's listen.
Oh, Katie, would you ask a male candidate that
question?
Yes,
I would ask. Well, I think least, a male candidate who least, is polling 1%, I would ask that question.
Well, look, I started out as a secretary in a 9-person real estate firm. I've been underestimated my whole life. And it doesn't trouble me that a bunch of polls or a bunch of pundits are underestimating me now.
And Margaret, weigh in on, you know, maybe that, but also the broader idea of all these candidates out there, are they all looking for the top spot, or maybe are some looking for the second?
Well, I think many of them are looking to rehabilitate or preserve their political options going forward. I mean, you don't run for president unless you want to be president. But you also know that for some candidates, there's a downside to running for president. Maybe you have to give up, you know, a seat that you already hold. If you don't, if you are a previously failed political candidate who wants to perhaps run for Senate one day, be considered on the vice presidential ticket, get a cabinet spot, it's great to be able to use the trail to rehabilitate your image, to get name recognition, to have somebody say, wow, she or he is much more impressive than I remember them a few years ago. And so for many of them, maybe it's not their primary concern, but hey, you know, there's nothing to lose by doing it. And for Carly Fiorina, part of what she's doing is testing the limits of the I'm running as the female candidate in the Republican pack this year. And maybe in that Yahoo interview you saw some of the dangers of running that way. But it's also gotten good response in some other forums where she has talked about her experiences as a woman.
Margaret Tal of Bloomberg News, NPR's Tamara Keith, thank you both for looking at this part of the road to 2016.
You're welcome.
Thank you.